This is Jim Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And I'm happy to be here on a podcast with my friend, Professor Lester Brickman, discussing asbestos litigation on the week of the release of the Manhattan Institute's Trial Lawyers, Inc. Asbestos Report. As we chronicle in the report, a flame retardant originally thought to be a magic mineral, asbestos ended up causing the death of thousands of individuals. Likewise, litigation that originally sought redress for the truly injured metastasized into a big business that in too many cases recruited sham victims to beef up the plaintiff's bar's bottom line. Professor Brickman has been researching asbestos litigation for the better part of two decades, and as early as 1992 in a series of articles called for reforming the way we process asbestos claims in the United States. So my first question for you, Professor Brickman, is why has it taken so long for us to really be addressing this issue? Why have we gone now 16 years since your original articles without a comprehensive solution to the asbestos litigation mess?
The simple answer is that a comprehensive solution would deprive the plaintiff's bar of the enormous funding that it has received from asbestos litigation. I would estimate that somewhere north of $30 billion in fees have gone to asbestos, the plaintiff's bar in asbestos litigation. And the vast majority of these fees have been for the non-malignant cases, the mostly bogus cases that I've written about extensively in a series of articles. So I think the bottom line is we haven't gotten far simply because there's too much money at stake.
Well, you chronicled for years frauds and this sort of sham, bogus, what we call the business model of Trial Lawyers, Inc., ability to crank out thousands of asbestos claims for many individuals who likely either weren't injured or were not injured due to asbestos exposure. Tell us a little bit about what you uncovered, and then tell us about why it took so long for Judge Janice Graham Jack until 2005, when she in the multi-district litigation hearing down in Texas finally uncovered and documented this fraud. And why haven't we seen more follow-up or what Judge Jack actually found?
All right, that's a mouthful, but I'll try to break it up into some component parts. The business model that you described has been enormously successful. I mean, this is better than Google in terms of profit margins. It's phenomenal. It may cost a plaintiff's lawyer $1,500 to generate one of these bogus claims. Back in the early 1990s, these claims were worth $100,000, which the lawyer would take about $50,000 of that for himself and his so-called expenses. The value dropped to around $60,000 by the late 90s and has fallen off substantially since then. In fact, I don't really have current figures. But given that cash flow, there was an enormous impetus to keep this engine running, and it did. It generated over 700,000 occupationally exposed workers were screened in this process. I estimate that around 500,000 of the 700,000 became claimants, and I further estimate that somewhere around 90% of those 500,000 were bogus. Bogus, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but basically the diagnoses supplied by the litigation doctors were simply fraudulent, to put the matter bluntly. Now, when it appeared that Congress was finally going to get its act together in the early 2000s and legislate this into an administrative agency resolution process, plaintiff lawyers, seeing the potential end game, decided they better take their money that they invested in asbestos and move it elsewhere. So that's how the silicosis epidemic, and I'm putting quote marks around epidemic, was created, because plaintiff lawyers stopped screening for asbestosis and started to take their same claimants and screen them for silicosis. And that led to Judge Jack's finding of massive fraud, that she found that virtually all of the claims of the 10,000 before were manufactured for money. What is really important, and I hope readers understand this, but it's a bit tricky in some sense, what Judge Jack did is unique. In my judgment, 99 out of 100 federal judges, when faced with the identical fact situation, would not have done what she did, because the cases that she was sitting on had been improperly removed from state court to federal court. she decided to go ahead with allowing discovery, 99 out of 100 federal judges, in my estimation, would simply have sent the cases back, remanded them to state court, washed their hands of it, and we would never now have the kind of documentation that Judge Jack has provided. So it is a serendipitous, a fortuitous event, but for the uniqueness of Judge Jack, a former nurse married to a cardiologist who understood the phony medicine that was going on and was obviously deeply offended as a matter of her personal integrity and her medical ethics, did what virtually no other judge in the land would have done.
Well, since then, and even really beginning before then, the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen a dramatic drop-off in the number of claimants that are being filed in courts and filed with trusts for asbestos. What do you attribute this to, and is the asbestos problem over?
It's not over because you still have the malignancies, and there's an area there which is lends itself to fraud, and that has to do with the use of bogus work histories or inconsistent work histories. But that aside, looking at the non-malignants, which account for 80% historically, or actually 90% historically, of the claims raised, a variety of reasons why they've declined. First, as I said, the expectation of congressional legislation led to the change to silicosis. Then you have Judge Jack's opinion, and everybody anticipated that as a consequence of her opinion, there would be the federal prosecutors would come in and start indicting people. Well, it's simply astounding that the Southern District U.S. Attorney's Office has not done that. They're asleep at the switch. It's deeply disappointing, and I can go beyond that. I did an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in which I expressed my views, so I won't repeat them here. Where we're going from here, in some measure, it depends. I predicted in that op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that since the U.S. attorney has not brought indictments, plaintiff attorneys would dip their toes in the water and see if it was safe to start screenings again. You report in Trial Lawyers, Inc. on asbestos that this is, in fact, occurring. If these toe dippers generate high profits, other lawyers will join in, and maybe we'll have another round of bogus claim production. That remains to be seen. But I think for the most part, the focus in asbestos litigation going forward is going to be on the cancers, on mesothelioma, lung cancer, and other cancers.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Brickman. This has been an illuminating discussion. We've just been able to scratch the surface of asbestos litigation. Our view at the Manhattan Institute is that it continues to be a serious problem. We advocate for a number of reform possibilities that can head off future explosions of this type of litigation. And this business model is exportable to other mass torts. They won't necessarily be as large as asbestos, but it's important to realize that the trial lawyers have copied and will copy this identical type of process in other types of litigation in the future. So, Professor Brickman, I'd like to thank you for being here. Our report is available at www.triallawyersinc.com. There you can find our entire asbestos report online, as well as previous reports in the Trial Lawyers, Inc. series. Thanks for joining us.